Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great podcast, Swagoo and Perk. An ESPN podcast led by its namesake hosts, Marcus Spears, that's Swagoo, and Kendrick Perkins. With new episodes every Tuesday morning, Swagoo and Perkins will bring listeners the latest NBA and NFL news, as well as a look inside their lives, career journey, with can't-miss conversations. That's Swagoo and Perk. Listen wherever you get your podcast, and also available on ESPN's YouTube channel. Also, NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, offers exclusive content Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Alongside Malika, there will be a full cast of NBA experts and insiders, including Kendrick Perkins, Jhené Egbuemeké, Vince Carter, Zach Lowe, Woj, Ramona Shelburne, and many of our NBA reporters from around the league. Get caught up with the latest from around the NBA on NBA Today on ESPN and the ESPN app. One app, one tap. And also available as a podcast. Listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcasts, and thanks for watching on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on?
Man, I'm really good right now. You know how we talk about building friendships as adults? It's a hard thing to do. I'm doing a good job of that, man. I had some good conversations and hangouts with my boys this week, and it felt good.
That's what's up, man. I was looking at you like you look like you feeling like you 24 years old, boy. That hoodie got all the youth in it. Not saying it's running small. It's just got that color pattern that the young boys is into.
Yeah, there are some things that I don't buy, and they just end up in my closet, and then I put them on. I feel like I've learned that about my hoodie collection on this show, is all the hoodies that you compliment are ones that just showed up in my closet. The ones that you ignore are ones that I picked out myself.
See, I don't even know if I necessarily compliment them as much as I notice. I'm like, oh man, yeah. You staying hip to game.
Oh yeah, nah, I got this psychedelic pattern, baby.
It's like I was thinking, actually, before we got on, I was just having a thought about, like, LeBron James in year 19, that's elder statesman territory by and large, but ain't nobody in their late 30s in this generation thinking themselves as an elder nothing. Like, that's just not how it works. Like we are the first generation that's staying as youthful as possible, as long, you know, back then they was getting married when they was 22. By the time they was 38, them kids were deep into high school and everything else. And not because they got caught slipping, but because that was the plan. Or maybe they did get caught slipping and it turned into the plan. But either way, then they turn into somebody's daddy. What it is to be somebody's daddy is a completely different situation now. You know what I'm saying? Now Daddy Foxworth show up with the electric hoodie.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, to you, it looks young. But if you watch the way that those guys walk into the NBA arena, you see what actually the young boys are wearing. And I can't pull that off. Like, this is our version of young. But if you want to check this hoodie out, you can see this on YouTube.
But see, that's what those young boys are wearing with all that bread, right? And those are really the only young boys I got any exposure to. I don't know what broke young boys is out here wearing these days.
It just hit me that you talk about this like it's a young pattern. It's just tie-dye. And you know what? Somebody sent me a Bomani Jones Right Time t-shirt with Bomani Jones' face on it. And that damn thing was tie-dye too.
That's because Gabe got youth on his side and he's the one that picked it out. I got it. I was like, oh, this is kind of fly. Like, you know, with this other gig I got, man, I ain't realized how much time I would just be spending trying on clothes. Mm-hmm. Like, so much of my job is just trying on clothes. They pay a lot of attention to the clothes. And I be having to get referrals. I need people to let me know what's going on out here.
You not suit and tie, or you kind of casual sometimes?
We do it a range of things, my brother. Okay. We got different settings and places for different stuff. We doing some stuff outside on the streets with the people, you know what I'm saying? We got some of the stuff at the desk. We gonna do some interviews and remote situations and the likes, but I still need input, right? Yeah. Like, let me give you an example of like why it is that I need input. To me, all jeans are the same. Like, when somebody is out and somebody makes fun of their jeans, I don't really know what it is that we making fun of. I don't have an eye for those things. Like, now I got a bunch of expensive jeans because I figure that's just probably the best move. I got nudged in the right direction in a similar way to your hoodie. You know what I'm saying? And I moved to a different place. And I guess I could kind of see the difference, but I wouldn't have known no difference if had nobody told me. I just don't. I don't think about those things.
That's fair. I mean, you're not a discerning gene purchaser, but I mean, you know a lot about music. You know a lot about sports.
Yep.
There's only so many things you can be expert on. And being fly is, I learned, I think I might have told you this a long time ago when I was in like middle school, I decided that being fly was not how I was going to attract attention. Being good at was my move. I'm gonna answer these questions in class and have people looking over like, I'm interested. I'm gonna score these touchdowns and have people look over like, I'm interested. Later in life, once I found somebody who cared about me, she started to say, why don't you put a little effort into that? But prior to that, I was like, nah, I'm good.
That's what I was about to say. I'm gonna be honest with y'all. If I was a little bit, shall we say, less successful in my endeavors, maybe I would have had to spend all that time y'all was spending in this mirror. But you know what? Didn't have to do that. Got past 6'2 and kept on going. And you know what I'm saying? I didn't really, all these details just wasn't really mattering. I'd be feeling bad for cats on some of these details because I'd be like, homie, it ain't happening. Like your gear can do something for you. But when I see them cats, I think we've talked about it all here, where they got the line down the middle of their forehead because they wear that do-rag so tight all the time, just trying to make them waves happen. Them waves ain't got you a whiff of it. Not once, not ever. It never was a thing.
I bought pomade in the seventh grade. Never got to the bottom of it. Like, I tried it once. It was like, no, that ain't that. I'm not going to stay up at night brush trying to train my hair and putting do-rags on. Like, you can't find a picture of me in a do-rag. I think I cut one of my mom's stocking caps when I was in seventh grade and tried for like a week. And these naps was resilient and they won. It's like, you win naps. This is your head. You are not going to get in line. You are not going to wait for me. And that's fine. But everybody, it's like marketing any product. Like, you need your hook. Like, you need your thing. You got to tell them, come on in. Either we got low prices, we got high quality. You was like, look, I'm 6'2", and I'm intelligent. That'll get a lot of customers in your door.
I got news for you. I'm guessing that's what it is. I ain't know what it was, man.
It don't matter.
Right. I have never spent no time. I see people on Twitter. They be like, so what is it that people are attracted to about you?
I don't know. I don't care.
I've been smart for a long time. Yeah. That wasn't always doing it. I've looked the way I've looked for a long time. That wasn't always doing it. I don't know what changed. I don't know what combination. I am just a little too confident in myself to be trying to figure it out. Like, sometimes I wonder, like, I don't know what you like about me. Oh, okay.
But you like it.
Yeah. Like, the why is so irrelevant.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I guess having this conversation, I used to be confused about why certain people would dress the way they dress or do certain things that it's just, like, ostentatious and out there. Not that I don't have some fits that get a little bit more attention, but some people made that their thing, and now it makes sense. If you're walking around, you're a regular dude, you got to stand out in some way, or regular person, you gotta find some way. You gotta have that great commercial that's gonna get some customers in the door.
Yeah, I'm good to look like I ain't supposed to be there wherever there happens to be. Like, I guess at this point in my life is a little bit different. Like, if I know I gotta wear a suit, like I put money in suits, because like, okay, if I'm gonna do that, like if I gotta do something for something, I'm gonna get on it. But I just be the first to tell you, I need help. I need input. I need a little bit of guidance. Like, I got a decent eye for colors. I can see some things I might like or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, I need some assistance.
Yeah, I remember there's times when I see something and I'm like, I like that. I want that. But then the follow through to like Google and find something and then buy it, I don't do that. I can remember a couple of times. I remember Avirex jackets. Like, I had to have one of them joints. But other than that, I'm just like, I don't know. Does it fit? Is it uncomfortable?
No, yeah, see, that's the other thing too, man. You ain't like wild skinny like me. I had to get rich to find out how clothes were supposed to fit. I had no idea. Yeah, like, I came out that era when your clothes wasn't supposed to fit, and then gradually figure it out. Like, for me, it's really been about a 15-year process. Just try to figure out, what does fit mean? You know, like, oh, it's supposed to hit my shoulder like that? I had no idea.
I learned to appreciate my size when I was playing football, because I could go in and get suits off the rack. They could have my alterations done by the end of the day. I can go buy pants. Like, they make pants that fit me. Mm-hmm. And, like, most of my teammates, like, nah, I can't do that. And I imagine the same, like, somebody's built like you. you have to have some money to get stuff that feels right. Nobody is making something with a 32-inch waist like 40 long. Like
No, 30 was okay. You was in the right zone. I wasn't offended. But even past that, right? So I was in the elevator. We shot something this weekend, and I was in the elevator at the location. And this dude came in the elevator, and he had to be 6'10". Like, I'm not, like, just throwing a number out there. Like, somewhere between 6'10 and 7 feet. And I assure you, that man can't hoop to save his life. Like, I have no doubt in my mind that that cat ain't got a hooping bone in his body. And I feel so bad for him, because I feel like the only way that you can pay for clothes at that size is by hooping. Otherwise, man, you got to pay double the price for everything.
I mean, it has to be such an uncomfortable existence, because nothing is made for a 6'10 dude. Like, if you can't afford private or at least first class, I mean, even getting on the public transportation, like buying clothes. We talk about a lot of disabilities, and obviously there are many disabilities worse than being 6'10", but being 6'10 and broke, that feel like a disability to me.
Yo, think about how much space your clothes take up in your dresser. Like, when you get sweatpants, you got to fold them over 3 times.
And he got to live in New York?
Oh, man.
Walking around New York real estate at 6'10 with no money?
Ugh. Oh, man. Getting on the subway? Oh, yeah, man. Like, we don't think enough about them cats, man. They going through it. Everybody asking you if you play ball, and you say no. And the only answer for why you don't play ball is you stink.
Yeah. Yeah. That is the only answer. Because if you are 6'10, somebody has tried.
They'll give you a try as many times as they possibly can. But you stink. That's it. Unfortunate. Terrible break. I'm not good at basketball either. You know what I'm saying? I'm at that height where people ask me if I played basketball, and I just wonder if you got a tiny twinge of that sism in you. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I'm not professional basketball height. Like, I could play in the league, but I guess I would be an NBA point guard in size, but I'm undersized everywhere else.
There's a slew of 6'5 dudes. Like, 6'5 is a height that you can find. 6'10 is not a height. That's a that just exists for basketball. That's it. Because I'm not sure what the numbers are, but the few guys you see in the NBA that seem unathletic are enormous, because it has some value just being huge. Like Boban, put Boban through the combine. He don't got that athleticism in him.
Yo, speaking of the combine, we're coming up on the, what would it be, 17th anniversary of the most important 4.38 seconds of your life.
Yeah. Apparently, according to Pablo's research, the official time was 4.34. I talked about it on the daily with him, so give me them 400ths, sir.
My bad. Dominique ran that 4.34 at the combine, and I love that you say that is the one time you ran a 4.3 ever.
Yep. Yeah, that was the first time and the last time, and it's all that mattered, because for the rest of my time in the league, I was considered a 4.3 guy. I was a speed guy, which will get you a call, just like being 6'10", will get you a tryout, run a 4.3 and a 40. Someone's going to think that you can play corner no matter what.
So this is the thing for me about the combine and a lot of that stuff. Was there any reason ever again for you to run a 40-yard dash?
No, of course
not. It's the
SAT.
I look like everything at the combine to me is the SAT. It seems like the most important thing in the world, and they get these results, and I get why they do it. And then it really don't ever come up ever again.
Yeah. I mean, the SAT actually feels more relevant to me, because maybe the combine is useful for guys who are coming out of D2 or small schools, but you kind of got what you need from watching anybody who was in a major conference. You got what you need there, you know? So the SAT, I think, might help to put everybody on the same playing field. But for the combine, to me, you're going to play football. We have a lot of footage of you playing football against other people who are good enough to play at the next level. That should be, and I honestly, to be honest with you, I was going to say that should be enough. I think it is enough. Nobody is using the combine to make these decisions. The point of the 40-yard dash, the point of the broad jump and the vertical leap and the shuttles, I think, is to try to assess your potential. So, like, how powerful you are, because you never do a 10, 11-foot just broad jump in football, but they want to assess your potential, what they can do with you. And maybe their assessment is your college team you're worse than your numbers suggest, or you're worse than the film suggests, because your coach hooked you up or your teammates were really good, or you're better than what your film suggests because you were in a bad situation. That's the only way I could argue the combine has any value.
And everybody get to kick it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like if they ever talked about getting rid of the combine, which obviously is never going to happen now because they done figured out ways to make money off of it.
Exactly.
But even if that wasn't the case, that's where everybody go kick it. That's the out-of-town trip. And I just, I know, I've seen they've tried to have some talk about maybe moving it out of Indianapolis and moving to these different places. And I imagine there would be better places to go kick it for the week than Indianapolis in February. Not trying to disparage y'all's little city up there, but I am saying it's brick.
Yeah, I'm not sure, actually. You're right about that. Two things is like, it is the NFL convention, because the Super Bowl is like the sports media convention. And like, you don't come to the Super Bowl if your team's not in it and just hang out and have a good time for that week. But for the combine, like, you stand outside of St. Elmo's, you will see a lot of drunk ass coaches and scouts and agents. Like, that's where people in football, front offices, coaches come, and they're not stressed out about a game coming up. They have free time, they hang out, they network. So it is important. But you also made the other major point is, it's a TV property now. Y'all will watch anything football, and the networks will pay bees for anything that has the NFL on it. And so that money is going into the game. So, and the labor force, like, they're not yet in the union. So, like, you're getting a valuable property without having to pay the labor. That ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, the agents were talking about boycotting or having pulling their clients out of the combine this year. But I didn't see, at least in the stuff that I read, you tell me if I'm wrong, it ain't look like the reason they were doing that was the reason you just pointed out, which would have been the one for me, which is, yo, y'all just getting paid off of us in this. There is a certain level of football fan that fancies himself a scout, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I can kind of see those people watching the combine. But here's the thing about watching these dudes run the 40-yard dash. A 4.3 and a 4.5 look the same till they put the clock up.
That's absolutely true. I mean, everyone there is an incredible athlete. It's to the point conversation we were having last week is like, the ability that you're seeing is the difference. It's above a level that we can discern, you know? So, and it's not even like they're running next to each other. So then you can at least have like, it's a competition. It's a race. It's just because y'all love the NFL. And if we put the NFL, like just throw the NFL logo on anything, y'all will watch it. And I'm with you. It's not exciting. I do appreciate catching some combine clips online, like seeing DK Metcalf, big body rolling. Like every 5 years, there's something that I'm like, glad the combine happened. But for the most part, I'm good.
Yeah, I kind of wish there would be a player once to just be like, not just the, you know, I'm coming to get weighed, but I'm going to skip drills and all this stuff. So like, for example, Trevor Lawrence last year, I'd have just gone, got on the scale at Clemson and then walked out. There's nothing else for me to do here. Ain't no spirit of competition. Ain't none of that. We know what time it is. Why am I waiting? Y'all can send the doctor to my crib, man. It's COVID. You know what I'm saying? Come to the crib. Whatever y'all need to do, we can do it right here. This should only take about 15 minutes.
I mean, the truth of it is, none of this changes anybody's draft status. Like, to me, it's so rare. My junior year, I had a really good season, sophomore, junior year. So I sent in for the league to tell me what draft, like, they do a draft analysis if you come out early. I did the draft analysis. They said I was a third round prospect. I went back because I was like, nah, that ain't good enough. I went back, played a whole nother season, went, dominated the combine, top five in every drill for cornerbacks. And then I got drafted in the third round. Like, you know, like no one is, they're using the combine data to just kind of reaffirm things that they already believe. No one's going there looking for football players. They're going there just to make sure, you know, like, yeah, he looked like he was fast. Oh, yeah, he ran a 4.4. Yeah, that seems pretty fast.
I feel like the people they really scrutinizing the hardest, honestly, is the linemen, because they want to see if your fat ass going to show up in shape.
Like, yeah, that's fair.
I think there's an element of like dummy tax, like the drug test at the combine was a dummy test, for example. But that is where, like, you remember Teron Armstead went out there and ran that 4.8 at 300-something pounds. Like, that's the guy that can make money at the combine is the fast offensive lineman. Because I'm sure he also did well in other athletic drills, but the fact that he can run 40 yards in 4.8 seconds is the most useless piece of information that you could offer me about that young man.
Yeah, it's like NBA shoot around. Like, we just want to make sure that y'all wake up. Nobody got arrested last night. Nothing went wrong. Make sure you behaved yourself. It's the same thing. The combine is like, it's a check. Let's just check in. Let's give you something to work towards. So during this period, you are acting right.
And we can hassle you in these interviews.
Oh, yeah.
How'd yours go?
It went fine. So, like, you have, like, a casual interview period where coaches and scouts can just pull you aside and you just, like, hang out in this area and they just pull you aside and chat. I had a few of those. And then there's the formal ones where they have to, like, schedule them and take you into, like, a suite. And I didn't do any of those. Like, those are reserved for high-round draft picks and guys with, like, the dreaded character issues. And so, like, I was neither of those things. Like, nobody was taking me in the first round and I was a good student who had never been in any trouble. So it went fine. I do remember going on visits to teams where you would have like more intense interviews. But again, there weren't too many questions. Like, they ain't had nothing to ask me. I didn't get none of the fun stuff. The craziest thing I got was like, would you rather be a cat or a dog? It's like, nobody was asking me about history of prostitution in my family or anything like that.
Yeah, here's my question. Why don't they be interviewing coaches like that?
They should. Right?
Because the thing about it is, by and large, they are investing more money in a head coach than they are in any of the players they are drafting, right? Especially outside the first round. They're going to put more money into the coach than they're going to put into the players. So why not, right? The whole argument and idea is we are making this investment in this person. And by the way, there's only one head coach. You got like 7-8 picks in this draft.
The coach is given an amount of power and you can't change them. Like, no matter what round you draft someone in, especially with the way that the money is now, if you draft somebody and it turns out that they're not in a place psychologically to perform, you can put them on the bench and everybody's going to be all right. Even a first round quarterback has happened multiple times. You hire a coach and you find out shit ain't going right, then you stuck with them for at least a few years.
Yeah. And don't you think for a second that these coaches don't be out here living life when it's gone. Like, college is a little different because there's so many of them and they got all these cats out here living in these small towns. And so they be wilding, dog. Everybody knows it, but they be wilding. Not every single one of them, but they be wilding and all still manage to get jobs.
I got stories about that. This might be worth the music, but we have some friends in common. Like, there were coaches and players who had friends in common.
Oh, yes.
I learned that it was not only the Terrapins that were doing that. It was happening elsewhere.
Not a defense, just to be clear. If you are in Manhattan, Kansas,
right?
Who you hollering at?
Yeah.
Like, really, where is it that this is going to happen? Because there's in academia, like, you've seen A Beautiful Mind, for example, where the Russell Crowe character, John Nash winds up marrying his student, right? This is not at all an uncommon thing in academia. And I think a significant part of it is an acknowledgement of your options in a lot of these towns are date your coworkers or date your students. Neither one of them is a great idea.
The academic comparison is a good one, too, because my assumption is academics who are chasing tenure, professorship, and all that stuff, they sleeping in their office too.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So, like, even if you are in D.C., like, where University of Maryland was, like, you ain't really going out to the clubs. Like, you are either out of town recruiting or you in your office. And then you poke your head out of your office, which happens to be on campus.
Yeah, here's the only thing I say about them cats in that regard, though. They sleeping in that office. That office ain't nowhere near the students. They ain't just stumbling upon them. They looking. They're like, yeah, I just happened to be over here in this apartment complex that I do not live in, but maybe I was thinking about renting a one bedroom. I hear I could get one for $750 a month. Hey, you guys are having a party? Mind if I come in? Hello, fellow kids.
That's rough, man. Yeah. I mean, to your point, though, about the coaches, I guess their belief is that they're older and more mature and they're kind of had a self-vetting process because by the time you're qualified enough or experienced enough to be a head coach, like, you would have already done the dumb things that would have kind of filtered you out of this process. And it's different for players. I mean, that's the only thing I could think of why they wouldn't put them through the same rigor that they do potential high draft picks. But I don't think that's an excuse, just like you. That's an explanation, not a defense.
Yeah, man. See, boy, that combine, we found interesting stuff about the combine, even as we talk about how, like, decidedly uninteresting the combine is. I wanted to run something by you because of your experience working with the Players Association. I have become fascinated by the baseball lockout. I really, really have. But one thing that always gets me, like I was talking to Howard Bryant about this when he covered the football team in Washington. The day, I think he was there the day Alex Rodriguez signed one of the monster extensions. And him explaining to players that baseball contracts were guaranteed. Like the dudes really had no idea. They did not know slash understand that the contracts were guaranteed and their minds were blown. And so it's kind of interesting to me, at least, that you wind up with so many cats who, like, football players have a resentment for basketball players, a giant resentment toward basketball players. Is it just because they don't know no baseball players?
I think so. I think that's part of it. But understanding the difference in the organizations or the leagues and the labor relationship is important. But I do think that having worked in two unions, the hardest thing to get people to understand is to win, like air quotes, win a labor struggle, there will be casualties and you don't get to come back from them. Like, it's one of those things where I may not get there with you. Like, nobody wants to be Dr. King, you know? And that's what it boils down to, is if you are too uninvolved or too stupid to understand what's happening in these labor fights, then you are detrimental to the union. If you are really smart, you are also detrimental to the union, because then you understand that this is not in my personal best interest. I will not benefit from that. If you're somewhere in the middle, then maybe we got a union. And the only way to get past that, because I think you understand this, and I think most of the listeners are smart enough to understand, this ain't a fair fight. It ain't never been a fair fight. They have all the levers of power when it comes to media, when it comes to money, when it comes to incentives. So if you think about money across football or basketball, since they do a more like straightforward revenue split, if you are to break down one percentage point of that money, the players potentially, that money goes into a salary cap, which the chances are that money, if it goes into salary cap, it's going to go to the top end players. Or it may not go to you at all. Even if you get 100% of the money that you put into salary cap, let's say that means that you get $150,000 more dollars. If you think about it from the owner's perspective, because there's only 32 of them, then it's a larger piece of money because they are collecting a bigger piece of that pie. And also they own the teams into perpetuity and they hand them off to their children. So it's not just that particular moment. They are more incentivized to withstand this. So they will think, all right, if we miss a whole season, it's not a casualty for me as an owner. It's a shot, but it's not a casualty. Me as a football player, I miss a whole season, never getting that season back. I don't get to give my gains to my son. So like, that's the tough point. And it brings me to like one of the few ways you can win outside of taking leagues to court and suing them is understanding that some people are not going to benefit from it and them being comfortable with it. And that's all about building a long-term culture and understanding. And that's hard as hell to do.
Well, one thing about baseball, them players have always been willing to miss some games. And while I agree with you that it's not really skin off the owner's backs necessarily to miss games, when that time comes and missing games is a possibility, they get to moving too, right? Mm-hmm. And so baseball is always interesting because the owners be like, you know what? We're just going to, fine, we'll just shut it down. And then the players be like, all right, cool. And the owners are like, damn, really? You are? Mm-hmm. Whoo! Right? Because up until recently, the owners had never won over there. They had not. And what is interesting to me is I'm seeing these quotes where these cats are like, yo, they need to stop talking to us like idiots. And that is where I'm like, oh, see, the owner's got a problem now. This has gotten personal in a much different way because they feel like once people feel like you just don't respect them, that's when this thing gets unwieldy. And baseball players are not like football players where they view themselves through such a short time horizon. Mm-hmm. They got a tussle going on over there.
Yeah, if you can have a 20-year career, then giving up a year or two, it don't matter. You'll reap the rewards. It'll be worth it. But your point about the way that they feel matters, and this is probably a good representation of what's happened in baseball, and baseball's leading this because it's happening in most sports now, is how we're switching to this money ball thing, which feels to me like it's becoming more of a pejorative than the positive thing, where it's these finance people running these leagues, and they forget that everything's about relationships. And I remember, like, before I went to business school, I was very much like, man, we can get into these numbers. I can figure this out. I can figure out a reason to do this. And as long as I can support it and justify it with rationale and numbers, like, that feels good. Surprisingly, the more time I spent in business school, the more I learned that should be secondary. Like, there's nothing more powerful than human emotion. And building relationships in emotion is like a more powerful tool than anything else. So I imagine, and maybe this is just a bit exaggerated for me, but especially when I'm reading that Passant article and it's referring to how they give out an arbitration belt, like, these fools is stupid. Like, they don't understand, as much money as they have on the owner side, they don't understand that even if you're not going to view them as partners, you need to treat them like partners and use the language of partners, because the worst thing you could possibly do is piss somebody off. Can you imagine the illogical you would do, or illogical you have done because you was angry? Just be nice. Just be nice, and you can jerk them around all you want financially if you just are nice and respectful and don't pass around belts for who worked them over the most, and don't gloat. Like, it's just stupid.
Yeah, it's like when owner of the Warriors at that championship parade praised the general manager for getting them dudes in on them good contracts. They're like, I don't think this contract's good at all, actually, sir. I dislike it all the way. Like, the thing I picked up in my first graduate school stop, it's probably the most important thing I learned in school, like, at least as it relates to these things, is the value of trust.
Yep.
Trust is the thing that lubricates all these interactions and all these transactions and makes it easier for you to get anything done if you ain't got to always go double check behind somebody on every little thing they did at any point. But there has to be some measure of belief. This person is not trying to jerk me, or at the very least, this person is not telling me this is cool and ultimately trying to jerk me. But once you got the trust involved in the system, then everything goes. And that's like the NBA probably has a bit more of it, but the NBA's got a bigger issue, which is they have such a split between the top players and the mid-tier players in terms of how much money they make, what their interests are, everything else. So, like, Chris Paul and LeBron James taking their role in the union wasn't about helping the players. It was taking the union back from these middle-class dudes who were loving the max salary, because that money's flowing right back down to them.
I think the disparity that you're talking about in experience for basketball players is trouble. I do think in baseball, though, that ownership group has a larger disparity than any other sports ownership group, which could be like part of the reason why the players' union has always been viewed as stronger, because there is infighting on the other side that doesn't exist in football and exists to a smaller degree in basketball. But there's a couple things that have been on my mind that I wanted to bring up about this. The tax, like, which is essentially trying to impose a salary cap. We're not trying. It is imposing a salary cap. It's like competitive balance tax. If that ain't the biggest pile of horse manure ever, because, like, if you want to create competitive balance tax on top, then you need to put a competitive balance tax on the bottom also. And that's like, as much as we hate salary caps in sports, what comes with a salary cap is a salary floor. Because, like, stopping you from overspending is not what's hurting the competitive balance. What's killing competitive balance is people underspending. So that's one thing that I really wanted to hit on. And the other thing that bothers me is I've been listening to and reading a lot of stuff about this too. And David Sampson, I listened to his podcast, Nothing Personal. He used to run the Marlins. And he's interesting because he views it from a almost 100% business perspective, which is fine. However, this is a unique industry in sports, in that these teams, like, traffic in civic pride, traffic in patriotism, are legal monopolies and also use public funds to build stadiums. Like, the expectation goes back to your point about trust. The expectation is if you're going to be doing all of that, then you should have other motivations other than profit. And if you don't have those other motivations in a true, like, capitalist way, the assumption or what we are taught is that the ecosystem or the market, there'll be pressure from other places coming to make you behave. But the only people that are putting pressure on them are the players. And we all understand that the players do not have the same strength and power. So it just goes back to trust, not just with the group that you're calling your partners, but with the rest of society. And the last thing is, I hadn't considered this until a couple years ago. Sports can die. Like, all the options that are out there, I would rather fire up my Xbox and watch a baseball game. Like, sports can die, and they acting like just because their revenue goes up every year recently, that it's always going to happen. Like, there should be a fear that this ecosystem does catch up to them at some point.
Here's my thing for the owners. If you can't afford the tip, you can't afford the restaurant.
Yeah.
Right? And so what confuses me, and maybe I kind of understand this being super rich thing, not because I'm super rich, but like I kind of understand it, but this is what I don't get. If I owned a baseball team, I didn't get it to save money, right? Like my homeboy Andre loves cars, right? He got this 1985 Mustang that he had back when we was in school. And I'll never forget, he was like, yeah, I bought this to dump money into it. He got it because he likes working with cars. And that was a car that he could, you know, mess around with, do stuff with. He did not get that to save money. He wasn't trying to spend all the money in the world if he didn't have to. But the point of it was to spend money on it. I feel like if you got a baseball team or whatever it is, don't you want to just pour money into this thing? I would want to be like a booster, right? Like, I would want to just be tricking off on it because that's how we're good and that's how this is fun and that's what's going to make people like me.
And that's the only reason to do it because, like, I can make money elsewhere and making money is fine, but you know what? And everyone can make money elsewhere. You know what everyone can't do? Hold a trophy on national TV up on the sky and say we did it. Only reason why I would buy a franchise is to chase that goal. But it feels like this was viewed that way. And then people started making a lot of money. And then they started selling teams. And it switched from being like that hood ornament to being an opportunity, which sucks, frankly, because I think you're right. There was a time when the people who were in this, I mean, that's maybe I'm being a bit nostalgic and skewing the history, but it feels like the new age owners are so much more aware and want so badly to run this like a business in any other industry when it's not a business in any other industry.
Man, they take the fun out of everything. Gosh. Dog.
Yeah.
They take the fun out of everything. But let's talk about something that's fun.
All right.
I don't know if the people saw it, but we released a trailer for a little TV show on HBO called Game Theory, which will premiere on March 13th. And yeah, baby, this TV show is for real. It is really happening. And I would just like to let you guys know I am excited. I am excited as hell.
What can you give us? Is there anything that you could give us that wouldn't be a spoiler but continued excitement? I guess I'm just trying to be careful to not share anything with me personally.
I'm with you. Okay, so this is what I can say, and I hope that the trailer kind of gave this indication, because what the show is going to be is like one of the harder things to explain, I would say, right? Like, it's not something that's that easy to put into a sentence. But I can tell you, like, aesthetically what we're trying to do, and this will make sense to people who are in this space, the kinds of things that we talk about here on The Right Time. Okay, so imagine if somebody gave you whatever your favorite episode of The Right Time is. Okay, boom. Somebody gave you that. And then they were like, all right, so we're going to take this and now we're going to put it in three dimensions, right? We're going to have this kind of vibe. We're going to have the kind of conversation, all that stuff, okay? Now we're going to put this on television. Well, imagine what you could do with like the ideas and thoughts that you get on this podcast if you had a team of writers, if you had all these people with cameras and all these different people to add ideas to what we start with, right? That's what we're going for in doing this. It's like, so I think for a lot of people, there's like, oh, is it going to be like a podcast on TV? Sort of. Mm-hmm. Not really, but sort of, right? But it's also, this ain't a TV show like How the Questionable was or like High Noon was or something like that. There's a whole different like scope and ambition to what this is right now. And so for me, it's fun. Like one thing we doing for the first episode, I was talking to one of our executive producers, James Davis, and we had this idea that actually is all just going to be in episode one. I'm not going to tell you what it is just yet. But like I had this idea for an essay, and then he comes to me and it's like, what if we fill in sentence here, just one sentence? And then next thing you know, I'm out on Monday and they shooting what that what if we was. And I see it now in three dimensions, right? Like I see the setup that our team built. I see the guest that we had come join us. I see the people that we brought in to participate in the whole thing. And so it's wild exciting to go from like, hey, I've got this idea about this thing. And now there's a team of people that can take that idea and turn it into something. Because I don't know how to make a TV show. I know how to talk on TV, but I don't know how to make a TV show. And so now my ideas are now being made into a television show with input from other people. People telling me like, hey, this part we can kind of leave out or whatever it is. And then boom, there we go. So like most of the stuff for the first episode is about done. And I'm telling you, man, it's a smoker.
I love it.
Like y'all know, I don't do a whole lot of telling you how dope my own stuff is.
Yeah.
It's a smoker.
I appreciate that you are not trying to come in with low expectations and like, it is what it is. Be honest with it. Like I'm excited about this stuff you've sent me is great.
There ain't no low expectations for a TV show on HBO.
True.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that's no such thing. There's no such thing as low expectations or a TV show on ESPN.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I've done a TV show that was pretty good and got canceled.
Yeah.
And by the way, no complaints about the fact that it got canceled. That ain't what the issue was, right? But expectations ain't never going to be low. Ain't nobody going to come in and be like, yo, that show wasn't really that good, but Bo said it wasn't going to be, so it's cool.
I mean, you could be like, well, we're going to work into it. We're going to see what's what. We're going to get going. It's going to take us a little while. No. Episode one, smoker. I believe it.
Episode one. I ain't said nothing about episode two. It is entirely possible that episode two may not live up to the lofty standard that I believe that episode one will wind up hitting. But no, man, this is like, this is fun. This is exciting. You know how crazy it is for me to look up and see that promo? Like, it's about me.
That is weird.
You know, like they got the pictures. I think that, you know, they're going to use that stuff that might get on a billboard somewhere or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's wild, dog. It's a completely different thought.
I can't wait to see the fits now that we started the show talking about that. I just want to know that you at least pick one thing in every outfit. Like, you got to contribute something.
Well, I decide what the outfit's ultimately going to be.
Okay, so they give you choices? Like,
yeah, things are presented to me.
What's the? Have you had one that was wild enough that you had to reject? That was just like, it's no way I'm wearing this.
Nah, they ain't trying. Okay, yet. You know what I'm saying? They not out here just like, just put it out there, see what he says. No. We not quite at that point. But nah, like we did a test show last week, and we got work to do. Don't get me wrong. Like the test show, we could have put it on the air, but it wouldn't have been as good as anybody wanted. Because and one thing you are correct about is we are going to like throw stuff out there. And some of the things we do early are not going to be there late. That's like with every television show. You just don't remember it. You know, like all kinds of shows go through all these changes and then it just happens and you don't think about like, oh, wow, they used to do this thing differently. Okay. So, yeah, some of the stuff I imagine that we do early, we may change up, you know, decide we're going to do it in a different way. But I feel like the vibe and the content and the people that we got, I feel like we got something here, and I'm gassed. G-A-S-S-E-D, gassed, dog.
You get me hype. I talked about last time how I'm happy for you, but seeing people this happy or this excited about something that they work towards is like, it's invigorating. Like, I'm excited for you. I'm excited for my own little thing.
And you've never seen me excited before, ever.
Not like this. not like this. This is what I imagined you were the first time you got like a big call. Like, hey, the first time they was like, hey, come on ESPN.
Yes.
Yeah, it was like, oh, like I've taken a step up. And from the one time I went over to HBO to do the Costa show with you, I was like, damn.
Oh yeah. Bob Costa's over there living a different life than I was living in there. I'm like, why my room over there in the corner? I mean, like Bob in there backstroking in his room.
I just even meant how they treated me. Like, it was like, I'm not even a real star, but HBO don't play, which speaks to the fact that expectations are high as hell over there.
Yes. Yes.
They give you the treatment that they expect, and you don't reach those expectations, they will take all that stuff away in a jiff.
Yeah. But nah, man, March 13th, I asked you, check it out. Game Theory, March 13th. I'm telling you, man, I feel good. I feel real good about this. And if nothing else, man, I don't know how the world gonna feel about it, but I care about like how y'all feel about it. Like when I say y'all, I mean like the people that listen to this stuff. You know what I mean? Like this kind of stuff I've been doing is what's building toward that thing that's coming there. And you guys are the ones that'll know if it's true to me or not. You know what I'm saying? Like this range of people around me, and I ain't gonna do nothing that ain't true to y'all. You know, like, you know who I am. You know what I'm about. You know where I'm coming from. You know the kinds of things that I do and don't do because of where I am or whatever. We got a chance to do it big, baby. So we gonna do it big. But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. I got ahead of myself. That's Dominique Foxworth. It was Foxworth Friday. Check him out. Get up. Anscape, it ain't undefeated no more. Anscape all over the ESPN landscape, but I guess I shouldn't say landscape. It's the Anscape. Appreciate you, man.
Thanks, brother.
All right, man. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Thanks for joining us on YouTube. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.